This is Irish Illustrated Insider with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated and Pete Sampson from The Athletic. I'm Tim Priester from Irish Illustrated. We've been gone for a while in terms of our podcasts. We've been doing our 1-2-3 stuff, but it's the first podcast in a while, and quite a bit has happened. Of course, Will Shipley chose Clemson over Notre Dame. Most recently, Notre Dame received great news, I think great news, from NC State cornerback Nick McLeod. He'll be a grad transfer. Notre Dame still waiting on Trevor Spates. He'll choose between Notre Dame and Rice. But we of course, need to address the Shipley situation and Notre Dame's running back situation. But I do want to talk about Nick McLeod and what he means to Notre Dame.
He's such an area of
perfect replacement, right?
Like, yeah. The area of need and getting talent at that area of need, the best offseason news you can have other than getting a five-star running back, I suppose. But, I mean, Nick McLeod can start. But we did not think 2 months ago they'd be bringing in a guy that would start at a position of need, right?
No, I didn't. I mean, I didn't think Nick McLeod existed, really. Like, there, right. That yeah. There would be a grad transfer corner out there that you would actually want. You know, that this, if they added a guy, it would be, you know, all due respect to Freddie Canteen, but it would be more like in the Freddie Canteen or Avery Sebastian mold, where you had major injury concerns, durability concerns, and you're just like sort of taking a guy to fill out the roster. This is as close as you're going to get to Cody Riggs, I think, right? I mean, and especially Absolutely. The body type, they had Bracy and Crawford essentially the same player, and then you stick McLeod on the other side, who's like, you know, kind of a longer, leaner corner who's played a bunch and doesn't have like a career of injury concerns, you know, like sort of, it was like MCL, I believe, last year.
Yeah.
And he tried to come back from and didn't really come back from it all the way and then shut it down, which opens the door for this. Like, Notre Dame couldn't ask for a much better situation than this.
I was going to say, it's not Freddie Canteen. It's Cody Riggs. Now, they're a little different style. I think Cody Riggs is more of a field cornerback and McLeod's more of a boundary cornerback, but McLeod can cover. I mean, he's played a ton of press. He has 21 career starts. He has 20 career passes defense, 15 in his sophomore junior year. So he's an established player. He is a starter. I'm sure that they'll open the competition up with Bracy, but when they go to nickel, both of them are on the field with Sean Crawford and Kyle Hamilton and whoever they choose as the fifth guy. So he's definitely a starter. Bracy, you know, remains a starter in the nickel coverage. And it's as good as you could possibly have hoped for. You talk about, wow, they got to recruit a corner, and they got Philip Riley, who I think is going to be really, really good. But here's one that you can plug in right away in 2020.
I think he makes Sean Crawford better. Sean Crawford now does not have to play every snap of the base
in
the nickel and in the dime, and they can use Crawford the way he's meant to be used. And
Bracy can still cross train, but he can get some reps at field, which he's more adept at. It really, really works. I know Clark Lee is excited about the flexibility that this gives them. So that's really, really exciting for the Notre Dame secondary. Jason Anye has verbally committed since the last time we got together. I think he's a real project. I know a lot of people are comparing him to Ade Ogundeji, and I think that he is that type of player. I think long-term he's that type of player, but, you know, everybody forgets about Kofi Wardlow, who was a guy that had very little high school playing experience, which is also Anye. I wouldn't compare him to Wardlow, but I wouldn't also just say, hey, he's going to be Ogundeji when you have a guy on the roster who comes from a similar background with limited football experience.
I feel like at least with Anye, like, there's something unique about him physically in terms of the length and the height,
which is why
Ogundeji was interesting and why Wardlow was just sort of like, all right, I guess. Wardlow is just sort of a guy you take at the end to help out your roster. There's nothing height, weight, reach of Wardlow that's unique, where Ogundeji is like, okay, that's the kind of guy I want to take a gamble on. And I think Anye is sort of in that group too. He's not, you know, they're not going to ask him to come in and play right away, because fortunately for Notre Dame's sake, they've recruited well enough where they don't have to do that anymore. You know, and I, I'm, I've asked Brian Kelly about this before, and I think they have sort of come around to this, not at my advice, but just like always take one more defensive end than you need, because that's a position where a rotation really sort of helps the program overall, and it gives you a chance to have the developmental guys. A bunch of them won't work out, but occasionally you get an Ogundeje. Occasionally you get a Jameer Jones. You'd have to say that worked out over the long haul. You know, maybe Anya will be in a similar boat to that.
Always take defensive tackle too. Defensive ends, defensive tackles, they are, it's valuable commodity. I go back to what Pete said, I think, a few years ago when they got a collection of defensive ends in a two-year period. When the body types are like that, if only one works out of your two or three stars over a two-year cycle, like Ogundeje and Jameer Jones, it offsets the fact that Jonathan Williams didn't work out or Bo Wallace can't get in. There's still takes. You're not all going to hit, but when they do, Ogundeje's a starter fifth year and was a solid backup on a playoff team. That is legit. That's enough for a four-year, three-star project right there.
He was
exact Trevor Lawrence.
Yes, he's the best player out there.
I mean, Ogundeje, arguably, when you go snap for snap, was Notre Dame's best pass rusher last
year. Yeah. And Jameer Jones was one of them, too.
In terms of percentage of productivity. Yeah, I think Ani ends up a tackle, especially Abiara in this class. But again, no, your points are all taken. I'm not saying he's going to be Kofi Wardlow as opposed to Ogundeje. I'm just saying that we have a tendency that when a guy commits to say, oh, he's going to be good. They're not all going to be good. It's never happened in the history of college football. So you're going to have some misses. But I agree with the philosophy of just going out and grabbing, especially a body type like his. Let's talk about the Will Shipley situation. He chose Clemson. Pete, you kind of suspected he might choose Notre Dame. But I know you're not surprised by him choosing Clemson. You know, my problem with the situation here is, I mean, I don't know why it was necessary just to put all your eggs in that basket, and then now you have to like almost start over recruiting running backs. And my problem with the list that they have is that other than Donovan Edwards and LJ Johnson, I don't really think that there's at least a short list that I've seen. I'm sure it's expanded since then. I just don't think that there's a lot of legitimate, true running backs on that roster. A guy that takes a handoff and immediately heads outside the hash marks, unless you're Reggie Bush, you're not a real running back. I'm exaggerating, but you know what I'm saying.
You're going to have to be taught to play running back. I think that's kind of where you're going with that, right?
Like, yeah.
There's not a natural... Give me running backs with some natural weave between the tackles, because like
Donovan Edwards
kind of something you have or you don't.
Yeah, they play.
Yeah,
Donovan Edwards and LJ Johnson play between the hash marks. If you're a running back in high school that plays outside of the hash marks, you're a guy running around on the football field, unless you're Reggie Bush.
And I know this speaks to the recruiting issue because he was an underrated player, but that's why I thought Sebo Flemister could play football at Notre Dame. A, they don't have a good running backs. They don't have enough running backs. That's the most, to be fair. If they had Dexter Williams, Josh Adams, and Will Shipley and Chris Tyree ahead of Sebo Flemister, he would not be taken. However, they didn't. And it's, look, that guy can play running back. Problem is they have too many guys that are at the bottom of the developmental scale like Sebo Flemister, and you need to have him be a support running back. That guy might win the job. That's a testament to him and a bad thing. Right? He should not win the 100%. Job at Notre Dame, but he could win the job.
Yeah, it's especially because when you're starting to compare Notre Dame's running back situation to the teams they want to compete with in the postseason, right. Those teams don't have a lot of running backs who were once committed to Georgia Southern. I mean, it's just to Georgia Tech and then to Notre Dame. So it's, I don't know, it, you know, Notre Dame's running back situation, they went all in with Shipley. And I guess it's like, it's not like the entire football operation refused to look at other running back film. They were, you know, preparing for this in some ways, but you could certainly argue that they, you know, could have prepared more, whether it be opening lines of communication with other running backs. You know, Prophet Brown is a guy that they had been recruiting, you know, even while they were recruiting Will Shipley. So maybe they have a chance with there, but with what Priester's saying is like, there's a lot of athletes who are trying to play running back here other than LJ Johnson and Donovan Edwards. And it's a difficult situation for an owner to be in, especially when you look at what the running back depth chart is going to look like a year from now or 2 years from now. You know, you're getting close to Kyren Williams and Chris Tyree, and that's it. That's just not a really healthy place to be.
Yeah, and I don't mean to just keep picking on Prophet Brown, but he's not even fast enough to play outside the hash. I mean, I don't even understand it. But I want to say this. Chris Tyree, I admire the way Chris Tyree plays, because although we can talk about him being small, he's a running back. He's a guy that will play between the hash marks and will take people on physically, whether he's prepared for that or not. He's willing to do that, and he's willing to run between the tackles, widen his base, and break off of that right or left. That's how you play the running back positions. And I'm not questioning whether they were looking at film of running backs. It was the line of communication with the other running backs. I didn't understand, you know, I said this on one of our 1-2-3s. I mean, I didn't understand why you couldn't be talking to other running backs. Clemson already had a commitment from a running back, and they still got Will Shipley.
Yeah, I mean, that's really the most frustrating part about this for Notre Dame, right? Like, Clemson was just like, yeah, we like Will Shipley. Great, we got him. And Notre Dame was desperately all in with this guy, and they couldn't turn the tide on that. You know, Notre Dame made a calculated decision that being all in with Will Shipley was a recruiting tactic unto itself, mm-hmm. that was going to impress him and help get him to come to Notre Dame. It didn't work out. But it's, you know, we're talking about developmental prospects earlier. Just because something doesn't work out doesn't mean it was a terrible decision or a wrong decision. It didn't work out for Notre Dame. They took a gamble and they lost, but they felt like they needed to take that gamble to have a chance to win it. So I sort of wrote this after the decision, just like, if I was Notre Dame, I would be, as much as this stings, I would be more heartened that I can go against Clemson and almost, you know, win head to head those kind of battles for kids from the South, than look at that as like, well, we can't engage in this kind of level of recruiting because it's just not working out. Because that's, to me, that's a pretty defeatist attitude, that you're not going to at least try. And they got so close that I think going all in, having Brian Kelly hyper involved in this, should Notre Dame can take some positive, like, okay, if we really bust our ass on this, we can make a serious run.
Last thing I want to touch upon, I think it's probably the furthest we've gone into a podcast since the coronavirus outbreak that we haven't mentioned it up until this point, but I do want to talk about real briefly in this segment, Jack Swarbrick saying that we won't be at capacity this fall. We have questions in the second segment about whether we think there's going to be a season or how many games, and we'll touch upon that. But Swarbrick's recent comments about not being at capacity, and we were kind of talking before we went started to record about the problems involved with deciding how many people that is, and just all the things that go into a game day situation that just make this, that will continue to make this a very difficult decision-making process for all of college football.
I don't like the proclamations 3 months in advance, but this one does make sense. We won't be at capacity. If that makes it, it's like one I can kind of live with when you hear that. It's someone being honest, and he has more information on it by leaps and bounds than we do. I don't like the school is canceled in November and December proclamation when you're sitting here in May. But when he said we won't be at capacity, it's because he recently learned they will not be at capacity. I don't feel like Jack Swarbrick said that in a way like, well, you know, we have a plan, but here's my guess, we won't be at capacity. He knows they will not be at capacity. And that's kind of when I read it, I was like, they won't be at capacity. I mean, you know, the idea of the students going and then whatever, I don't know who do you limit the capacity to? Is it season ticket holders? But most season ticket holders, I would guess, just logically speaking, are older because they've had those season tickets for so long. Notre Dame doesn't turn over all its season tickets very often. So the people that really should not be there would be the season ticket holders. So do you limit season ticket holders from going? That doesn't make sense either. It's a very strange situation in that obviously you would think, didn't Swarbrick say we are in a unique situation with our tickets where half are season ticket holders and we have half open or in that realm? Season ticket holders,
is that accurate? I mean, is that
he brought it up on the Zoom?
I know, I know he said it, and I'm sure he's right.
They're, when he says it, of course, they're under half season tickets is less than half of the capacity of the stadium.
Okay.
Do you agree though that
they want it to be half?
They're probably older,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, but I agree because
yeah,
I don't think a lot of young people have the resources to buy them,
right?
And make the donations to have the privilege to then buy them. So yeah, it's I don't understand how that works at all. Who gets chosen to be in there or not?
I
mean,
I know.
I sort of view it as like, it's going to be students and faculty and that's it. Like, I don't know if there's going to be any season ticket holders at all.
Well, I know as a member of the media that would get applications, I know I'm not in the group that not that I would be in the stadium, but I know that I'm not in the group of season ticket holders that's included because I didn't receive anything. So anyway, I don't know. And then spacing, we were talking about this before we recorded, just spacing in the stadium concessions, which you probably just have to not necessarily eliminate, but like inside the stadium, if concessions probably needs to be all outside of the stadium. I don't know, man. It's just, there are so many things to consider that you can't consider them all.
Yeah. I know what Swarbrick is saying where students, should have the first rights and privilege to it, but I agree with that. But part of the allure of the student body at Notre Dame and at any school in the student section is being on top of each other the entire time. I mean, that is the part, is the love of the student section is that you are combined and you're like, you remember the big touchdown you're landing on each other. If you're social distancing, who cares if it's students or anybody else in there?
No, hey, I mean, hey brother, hey, move over. I got to be saying that.
But, I mean, if you had an entire stadium to space out, like this, if they had the students, but then forced them to sit in the student section while the rest of the stadium was empty, that would sort of defeat the whole purpose. But
What's the fun of spreading 4,000 students around the stadium? It's like they don't want to be there anymore.
Students should be in luxury suites. Why not? Have seniors be in luxury suites in the mezzanine level.
It's too hard. And it'd be too hard to pass the bottle from one to
another. Yeah, totally out of luck.
They serve alcohol up there. It should be fine. I guess I sort of view the stadium as like, it's going to be students and probably some faculty, but like you'll have those, 10,000 people spread out over 80,000 areas to sit. So I don't know. I just don't know how you could, I think Priester, you'd mentioned something like, in the 40s, like half capacity.
Swarbrick had originally.
That seems difficult.
Yeah. Initially he threw out a figure of 45,000. That was a while back before. And 45 is too many. Doesn't work. Tim, last thing.
My honest reaction to 10,000 people spread around a college football stadium that hosts 80,000 is they would rather be home watching it on TV.
Well, they would have that option.
But my point is, like, who cares if you're in a stadium of 10,000 that holds 80,000? Then it just, I mean, you went to a Notre Dame game and it's got nothing to do with your normal.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, but I know where you're coming from. I mean, it's a completely different environment.
Without tailgating, too.
Well, he didn't say without tailgating. He said tailgating would be altered. And I don't know. Again, now we're talking about outside the stadium for crying out loud.
Yeah.
I don't know how you control that. All right, segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider, burning up the boards. We start with a question from Jim_Booney_CRS. I know that Notre Dame signed a ton of linebackers 2 years ago, but are you even a little bit concerned that it seems like we don't lead for any linebacker recruits, let alone have a list of reasonable linebacker prospects?
Yes, I think that's a legit concern at this point. I realize they take safeties and turn them into linebackers, but there aren't a lot of safeties on the roster that I see that could be turned into linebackers or safeties in the recruiting class. Like they completely whiffed at safety last cycle. So it's, you're removing the prospect of that conversion of the Paul Mawala type, to move down to the box a little bit. So I don't know. I understand, like, they overloaded a couple cycles ago, but I don't know about you guys, but I don't hear a lot about Aseda Okwuanu, a little bit about JD Bertrand, a bunch about Maris Lufau, and Jack Kaiser. Those guys come up to me, you know, when I talk to people around the group, but I guess I just sort of look at that group. I don't have a lot of confidence that they're going to go 4-4-4 from that class, which they sort of need to do if you're going to almost skip over one cycle and then maybe only sign one or two, the current one that's under construction now.
I didn't think it was a big deal when they missed out in 2020 because of the four you just mentioned. Plus, you had three in the previous class. I know Ogofo has moved to defensive end, but that's fine. He's still on your roster. And they redshirt. The redshirts have actually worked out. Like, Drew White will be around for a fifth year and be a good starter.
Yep.
We didn't see that coming. But you can't have two project linebackers land in 2021 and think it's going to work out either. Because, Pete, as you said, all four of those guys aren't hitting. Neither are the next two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're not your primary targets, if they're not top tier prospects, you cannot bet on two guys hitting. It's just not the way it works in the position. Also due to injuries. I mean, it's a volatile shoulder injury position at linebacker. And
yeah.
At some point you need numbers. When you get zero, at some point you need numbers, and they need to be quality numbers.
You know, when you look at the linebackers, there's only one with 1 year of eligibility remaining, Jordan Jim Markeith, but Owusu-Koramoah, you know.
Right. He has 1 year of eligibility.
He's 1.5 years of eligibility.
Because he'll be getting paid and deemed ineligible.
Would think so. And then Aseda Okwuanu, J.D. Bertrand, Leofau and Kaiser all have 4 years of eligibility. Jack Lamb with three. Mawala's down to two.
Bauer's down to two.
Pardon me?
Bauer's down to two.
Bauer's down to two.
He played both years, yeah.
You know, fortunately, Drew White does have 2 years. Yeah, I don't understand it. Pete, you and I have both had interviews with Clark Lee. We had a million things to ask him. I didn't ask him about the linebacker recruiting. I don't know that you did.
No,
so,
I didn't.
So bad on us for not doing that. But I don't have an answer for it right now. I would imagine that before all is said and done with this class, so they will add a linebacker. But I don't know who it would be.
That's what I mentioned. They're going to end up doing it, but that's not a hit. That's
right.
That's the body. And
right.
That doesn't work out necessarily.
Yep.
CMU Devils fan. As much as missing out on Will Shipley stung, am I crazy for viewing a guy like Rocco Spindler as a more important recruit on positional value alone? Notre Dame had a guy like Josh Adams, a three-star running back who went undrafted, in the running for the Heisman late in the season, as well as converted wide receivers Procise and Armstrong, developing into legitimate starting running backs. I have four disagreements. I'll let you guys go first.
Yeah. Yes, you're crazy. Notre Dame is just not recruited running back well enough to just sort of like, well, missed on Shipley, it's fine. I think they have done a pretty good job at guard, although this class needs to be great at that position. So Spindler is really important. I guess I respect to CMU Devils fan. I just don't really like these styles of questions because it's like, well, isn't this one actually more important? Because I get a lot of like, well, you know, isn't having Tyler Buchner more important than Will Shipley? Or, you know, isn't having a game-breaking receiver more important than having a game-breaking running back? And my answer is pretty much always the same. Like, Clemson chose all three. They took all of the above. Ohio State chooses all of the above. And often they do it, like, in triplicate. So, you know, Notre Dame needed Spindler and Shipley. That's the way I look at it. So I don't really like entertaining the isn't this guard more important than running back? I don't think that he is, but ultimately you need to sign both of these kinds of guys, not just choose which one's more important.
Yeah, we live in a ranking world of sports coverage, and it's and we're always ranking and not to CMU Devils fan, not to keep harping on this, but I mean Spindler's really important. I think Spindler's a potentially great offensive guard. If you were just ranking 5-4-3 star guards, he's a 5-star guard. But you need Will Shipley and or somebody else. Now, you did get Chris Tyree, and I think that we tend to overlook that. But we don't look at him as a guy that's going to carry 15 times a game, per se. But Spindler's very important, there's no doubt. And they better get him. They absolutely better get him. He's that important, I think, to this class. And I would argue, you know, that's the other thing that happens in recruiting. You lose a guy. And it completely overshadowed getting Philip Riley. And that's just not reality. I mean, he's really, really important to Notre Dame. Now, I think you could argue, you might be able to argue that a cornerback, a great cornerback, is as important as getting the running back. But again, that's the whole rating system. I think Philip Riley is really important to Notre Dame. Spindler is as well. And you better have an alternative for Will Shipley. Otherwise, you're coming up short at running back.
And I just to put a quick point on this, Tim, you mentioned that Spindler can be a great offensive guard. You know what a great offensive guard can really be augmented by? A great running back behind him.
Well, we do. Yeah, we have a
look. CJ Procise, Jafar Armstrong. That's one plus and one we have no idea and is trending towards not plus right now. So let's not say they became solid starting running backs because Jafar Armstrong has not beaten.
No, he's not.
Josh Adams was a top 200 running back, but the only reason he didn't go drafted was because he arrived on campus with a bad knee. So that was going to be found out as he did his medicals for the NFL. Josh Adams is a pretty good running back. I mean, he might not have been Saquon Barkley, as Pete pointed out a lot in 2017, but Josh Adams and Jafar Armstrong are different breeds. You know, we're not looking at – you never looked at Josh Adams and thought that guy won't be a good running back at Notre Dame. The second he hit the floor running, he was a good running back as a freshman. If you get Josh Adams instead of Will Shipley, I'm okay. That's fine, but you better get Josh Adams.
I have to say, okay, so that cycle, Notre Dame thought it was getting Ronald Jones, and it missed. It got Josh Adams instead.
And that's Dexter. Okay. They had Dexter Williams.
Yeah.
However, put Ronald Jones behind the 2017 offensive line. All right. I mean, Ronald Jones is in New York at the Heisman ceremony at that point. Because he was just a superior level of running back behind a great offense. It's again, I want both. I want the great running back and the great guard and the great corner, like, and then probably a great quarterback and a receiver and all that. I mean, it's everything. You're trying to get it all.
Tying into your comment, O'Malley, into the next question from CMU Pens fan, how can Irish get more out of Kramer, Eichenberg, and Hainsey? Put better running backs behind them. Do you think these guys are able to raise their games to the next level, or were they just slightly overhyped? Are who they are and a step down from previous ND O-lines?
I absolutely think Eichenberg is going to raise his game. I'm kind of pounding that drum this whole offseason. I liken him to McGlinchey as a senior where he was not – this is 2016 McGlinchey – where he was a good player. He was a very good blocker, happened to be on a bad team. He made a lot of dumb pre-snap errors, and everybody remembers him for that. Then he became an All-American. I don't know if Eichenberg is going to be a top five offensive lineman All-American. I'm just saying I think he will be an outstanding player. Hainsey has been a very good player, and Kramer started coming into his own last year. He was overhyped last year because everybody in the world saw his recruiting ranking and made him an All-American. That was just dumb. We knew that wasn't Tommy Kramer. But they're a step down because they're not as good as Quentin Nelson and Mike McGlinchey. I mean, I just said Liam Eichenberg can be a guy that steps up, but he won't be as good as McGlinchey. The second best lineman on the team.
Yeah, I mean, the comparison's not exactly that line with McGlinchey and previous Notre Dame lines. I mean, Pete, I don't know what your thoughts. I mean, I don't think Tim. I'm not as high on Eichenberg as you are. I think he can be very good this year. I don't know that he's McGlinchey like because I don't know that he's as mentally tough as McGlinchey. Hainsey's been a good lineman and will be very good if he's healthy again. And then Kramer was, as you said, definitely trending up, definitely playing his best football by far at Notre Dame when he suffered the injury last year. Pete?
Yeah, I just think they're good offensive linemen, and they're unfortunately being they're the guys that followed the guys. Notre Dame was not going to have a first round pick starting at left tackle forever, even though it seems like it's been that way since Brian Kelly showed up, and that's. That's fine. I mean, there are plenty of good offensive linemen who go in the second, third, fourth, fifth round. I guess I look at Eichenberg and Kramer as like they're surely going to get drafted next year. Maybe it'll be day two or day three instead of day one. But what they need to do to raise their level, I don't. Maybe Chris Watt will help out a little bit. I'm not really sure.
That's good.
But experience and. Five starters returning on an offensive line. I mean, I hate to say just like they should default to being better because they have all that continuity back, but they should that should be their default. Like they should be a lot better because they have everybody back.
I completely agree with you. They should default to being better. And Tim mentioned something we did on a Irish Illustrated 1-2-3. this line, this might be the undervalued unit of the team. Like, this should be the best. Yeah. People are so down on them. They should be really good. Especially there's no excuse not to be.
And you get touches for Tyree that can make them look better. No doubt about that. Irish Cowboy 88. I know it's hard to predict something like freshman performances and team fit with a group of guys who've only had one total practice at Notre Dame that was weeks ago, but best educated impact freshman. And do you think anyone has a chance at a, quote, Hamilton-like, unquote, breakout season?
Were you guys surprised when Brian Kelly sort of floated that this, I think it was this week, that, you know, had the Kyle Hamilton freshman All-American season, and we're going to have guys like that again this year? Like, because it's hard for me to look at the roster and figure out who the next Kyle Hamilton is.
They would all be on the offensive side.
Yes.
Other than Botello being a crazy edge pass rusher, right. I think all of them are on the offensive side, and Chris Tyree is probably who he has in mind.
That would be a positive for Notre Dame if that's who it was.
Yeah, and I think there are a couple more players.
Like, if you had said, who's the next Kyle Hamilton, and what would be the best answer for that for Notre Dame, and the choices were Mayer, Jordan Johnson, or Tyree, I mean, I think we would all pick Tyree, right?
Yes, and I think he's
because
the most
of opportunity mainly.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, they already have Tommy Tremble at Mayer's position, and he will be good. And Brock Rice could end up being good. And as I think I wrote this story recently in the countdown, Pete, just a wild guess and guess low, the total number of true freshman catches for tight ends under Brian Kelly in all 10 years.
Oh, true freshman?
Yeah.
Ooh.
And I'm remember that Alizé Jones did play. He had to start because Smythe got hurt. 16. And Alizé Jones, had 13.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Now, Mayer's going to get some catches, but, like, he's not breaking out into an all-star as a number three tight end.
This is another tendency of the way we evaluate things these days. I mean, another Kyle Hamilton. Kyle Hamilton's Jalen Smith, right? I mean.
Right. Right. Now, I don't think BK said we're going to have a Kyle Hamilton type, did he? I didn't read it that way.
I took it as, like, we're going to have some freshmen on our roster this year that have a Kyle Hamilton-like impact.
Okay, well, then Tyree is a candidate for that. Michael Mayer is a candidate for that, although he has, Tremble to deal with. Is he talking about Jordan Johnson? I'm really high on Xavier Watts. I mean, I think those are the guys that are in the running for something like that, but I still wouldn't say Kyle Hamilton because, to me, Kyle Hamilton is a Jalen Smith-like physical presence coming into the program.
I think he wanted to end a Zoom call on a positive note.
Is that what he did?
Yes. Kay Garrity 8. ND has really used transfers to help shore up some spots on the roster this year, more so than in the past. Do you think that as a transfer portal changes and college football adapts to it, that ND will be more willing to look for fits via the portal, or does this revolve around the production that ND gets from the 3 or 4 transfers they took this cycle?
That's an interesting question. I felt when they started getting more in the transfer portal that, I don't know, I sort of had this like, well, that's like not a very like Notre Dame thing to do. Like Notre Dame is, you know, I got the 4-year institution and, you know, all sort of like what Notre Dame presents itself to be. And I guess the more I thought about it, I was like, well, Mike Bray does it.
Right.
Every other sport does it. Like, why shouldn't Notre Dame football do it? And, you know, the grad transfer works out perfectly for Notre Dame, probably more so than just traditional transfers because they graduated. They've already shown that they can hack it academically. And as long as you're willing to sort of not pretend like they're here to get their master's degree, then I say go for it. But this might be how Notre Dame, I guess, like, what's the best? If you can't recruit 5-star freshmen at the level you want, then get a 5th-year player who's had 4 years of college weight training and has played in what is McLeod started 19, 20 games at NC State.
Starts.
20. I mean, I think that might be the workaround to get caught up to teams that have a bunch of Kyle Hamiltons running around is you can get the guy who's been already developed for you and then just sort of take advantage of it at the very end.
Yeah, I don't know that how these guys do sets the bar for what they do moving forward per se. But I mean, clearly they're about to, they look like they're on the verge of getting production from grad transfers that surpasses all the others combined.
Oh, I mean, those three.
Skowronek has 110 career receptions. I stand
by. Notre Dame's leading receiver.
Yeah. Oh, well,
returning. Yes, returning. Receiver.
Combined. Yeah. No, I think he's going to play a prominent role. I don't know about Pryor yet because the competition there.
But he has 2 years. He has 2 years too. So I mean, he can.
And he has 2 years, right? And then clearly McLeod's in the running. So I mean, I don't know that suddenly they said, okay, we're going to start doing this more. I think they found some people that definitely fit, and I don't think what they do in the future will be dependent upon how these guys play per se. I think you evaluate each situation individually, and I think they've got a really good chance of getting some real production out of this group. And I don't know what Trevor Spates would do, but he's a possibility as well.
I think part of Kay Garrity's question, though, is also as the transfer portal changes, do they start looking for more Gilmans and Amir Carlisles? Those were obvious fits. The second you spoke to those guys, you knew they fit at Notre Dame.
Right.
And I know I gave two good examples of players there, but they haven't really brought in anyone that didn't work out other than the injuries. And that was Freddie Canteen's. He probably wasn't going to work out, but he was a grand transfer.
Camp Smith had 7 receptions in the first 2 games. Now it was short stuff.
Yeah, but he was.
That was my trivia question of the week was who did Ian Book throw his first touchdown pass to, and it was Camp Smith in North Carolina. And Camp Smith would have helped them more. He was injured, but he was injured right when Kevin Stefferson became eligible to play again from his suspension, so it ended up working out pretty well. Kaiser Wilhelm, Alabama and TCU are reportedly in talks to play each other and their California opponents if their California opponents are not able to start the season on time. Is Notre Dame making preparations in case the Stanford and USC games cannot be played? If so, what would be the likeliest contingency plan? And then ND615, a Irish Illustrated subscriber, added, BYU finishes at Stanford, so Notre Dame and BYU could play that weekend.
Certainly conversations with Swarbrick would lead me to believe that Notre Dame is preparing for everything. This would fall under the very broad umbrella of everything. But the way Swarbrick described it to me is if a game gets canceled, you're more likely to not play it at all than say, hey, you're not playing, let's play. Right. That's way more complicated than fans and media probably make it out to be.
It's very hard for me to just thinking about who you want to replace on a schedule and when you're losing USC and Stanford, because it just doesn't feel like the college football season even plays out the same way if you're losing 1/4 of the Pac-12 or 1/3 of the Pac-12 to California schools and teams that was the Pac-12 not eligible for the playoffs. I mean, you could joke that they're not anyway, but it's really hard for me to think about Notre Dame. Yeah, Pete, exactly what Pete said. Instead of putting, if they just don't play USC, I don't think they're going to play anybody. I think it's a vacant week. I don't think they have enough games. That's why that's why Swarbrick has said in the past, we will have a competitive enough schedule, even if not everything is played. All you need is, if they beat Clemson, it doesn't matter who you play against. It's better not to play USC. If you want to look at it from a football standpoint, if you beat Clemson, you don't want to play USC.
No.
Awesome. It's over. No, you beat Clemson. Just go play Louisville and end your season.
Yeah, I mean, I don't, I guess the BYU-Stanford thing, that could work out just because of the scheduling connection there. But, yeah, it really leads us into – a couple other questions, and I'm going to pop ahead, I think, to this one. Jay Tafel, one, if you were a betting man, would you bet that Notre Dame will play its full schedule this upcoming season?
I would not.
Because of California, that's where I am on the
– Yeah, no.
That's why I would bet no, because of the California situation.
Yeah, I would say no. I would say even beyond that, there's just so many conflicts that can occur here. We know what direction the Pac-12 is headed. We don't know exactly where some of the other conferences are headed. I mean, Arkansas and the SEC, Notre Dame's never played Arkansas. Arkansas obviously has never been to Notre Dame Stadium. I'm sure they would like to they would like to be able to make that trip. But I think it's just too early to comment on something like that right now. But if I were a betting man, I would absolutely bet that they will not play a 12-game schedule.
And the bet, you're sort of hedging it against, okay, you start on time and then there's a pause or shut it down. Like, that, who knows what this is going to look like at the very end. So it's that would factor into that bet as it's asked.
I'm going to jump to Way to Go K-Man here, Tim. If USC doesn't have a season, but Notre Dame does, this continuing along this, who would you want to replace USC on a schedule with? In other words, where would you like to end? If we can't check into our hotel in Manhattan Beach, our favorite hotel to check in into at the end of the season, where would you like them to play? I got an idea. I mean, it's not going to be anywhere in California. So where would you?
I was going to say this. Can they play Pepperdine? No, that's the same thing. But no, I don't know. I'm Manhattan Beach or bus. Okay. If USC doesn't play, I'm not watching football. USC has to play.
Arizona is Arizona State.
Yeah.
Low COVID rate, and you know the weather will be good.
Yeah, Arizona State. Yeah, the Phoenix Tempe trip is the winner.
All right, I'm bouncing around, Tim, I'll stick with this. Irish Boy One, are you optimistic there will even be a season this year? This is a different type question.
Yeah, I think they'll play college football this year. Notre Dame will play college football this year.
I'm highly optimistic of that.
Yeah, optimistic isn't a word that I'm using a whole lot these days, but do I think that Notre Dame will there be a Notre Dame football season? Yes, I do believe that there will be.
As long as they play Clemson and a bunch of other teams in the situation right now, I'm being somewhat flippant, but really Clemson is the reason you can't get much more excited than Notre Dame Clemson. Brian Kelly has not had this opportunity in his tenure at Notre Dame. No one has since Charlie Weiss's first year. This is ridiculous compared to who else has come to Notre Dame Stadium in the last 15 years. Number one, Clemson, playoff. I mean, just imagine had they won the title last year. But this is the best opportunity for Brian Kelly and the Notre Dame fan base to have a team come to its stadium that really genuinely matters and is not overhyped. We have seen them play. As long as they play Clemson, Notre Dame's can fill out their schedule with whoever else wants to play Notre Dame. Just get Clemson on the
five home and homes with Western Michigan.
Get Chuck Martin on the phone. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that one of the reasons to be optimistic about is that John Swofford at the ACC said just yesterday that all ACC schools have informed him that they plan to be open, like for in-person instruction in the fall. So if that's true, that's half of Notre Dame's schedule right there. We'll be in business. Stanford and USC, as much as the California State system is shut down for the fall, or at least remote, USC and Stanford are not part of that.
Right.
So maybe there's a little bit of flexibility there. I think that it's worth looking at California beyond the California public school system when you're trying to figure out, okay, is USC open? Is Stanford open? Those are two private schools that have to play by government rules, but not necessarily the rest of the state from an education perspective. So Navy sounds like it's going to be a go in terms of, they're not going to shut down. If the ACC is open and the Rams open, that gets you a pretty far down the road in terms of having an actual schedule.
Last question, Andy, from aforementioned ND615. How concerned are you guys with possible media restrictions for this season, as well as just sitting in a cramped press box for 8 to 10 hours? Would you feel comfortable doing your jobs to your ideal quality without post-game access, or even if you weren't allowed in the stadium entirely?
There's a lot of questions here. I will say quickly that 10 of Notre Dame's games, I've never been to Lambeau Field, but I can guess, will not be cramped, because Notre Dame is not a cramped press box, even if we all go there. Right. And Heinz Field, Charlotte, FedEx Field, where we think they might play Navy, and the new Atlanta, I mean, there's no way the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is cramped in the press box. These are all beautiful places. Only USC is cramped. And they have a new press box. Maybe they're not cramped anymore, for all we know.
Yeah, that's all changed.
This is not a cramped situation. We have we're the lap of luxury this year. Well, especially to cover Notre Dame.
Especially when schools, including Notre Dame, will certainly limit limit the amount of people. As long as they allow two, O'Malley, we're...
Yeah, exactly. They're allowed two. Yeah.
As long as they allow two per outlet, we're good. But, you know, you guys are in a, from a different generation with a different bill of health. And getting on a plane and flying 8 hours to Ireland is not something that excites me a whole lot right now.
Yeah, I was gonna ask you guys this because I was having this conversation with my wife yesterday. She's like, "You're not going to Ireland, are you?" And I was like, "Well, I don't think they're gonna play in Ireland." She's like, "No, that's not really what I'm asking.
That's not the question, huh?"
Yeah, it's like what I'm asking is Notre Dame is playing in Ireland. Will you go cover the game? And I was like, "I don't know." Like my first reaction is no, but then my second reaction is like, that's a decision you could make on August 27th, which is probably the right decision if you're a reporter. But it's just weird to think like, you know, I'm not going to cover a Notre Dame football game because it's not safe to do so. That might be a world that we're living in at that point. Hopefully not, but it's weird to think about.
Don't you feel more open to flying to Pittsburgh, Atlanta, Charlotte, and D.C., though, than Ireland?
I certainly feel open to driving to most of them.
Oh, yeah, well, Pittsburgh. We can drive to Pittsburgh. We can drive to Green Bay. We have direct flights to Atlanta and Charlotte.
Yeah.
Provided that we can get on those flights.
You know, the press box situation, I'm the most prepared for this, as Jack Freeman can attest, because I bring my own lunch anyway to home games. So I don't have to worry about the catering or any other germs you guys will be getting coleslaw mess they throw out there.
I was thinking about that the other day, you know, and I made some comments about it's going to change the world forever. And, you know, I probably overstepped it like I normally do. But 20 years from now, the term salad bar, people will say, what the hell is a salad bar?
Yeah.
Because we're not going to eat that way anymore. We can't eat that. We can't eat that way anymore.
No. The first part of this question is how concerned am I about possible media restrictions as it affects me doing my job? Zero. Like the inconveniences that sports reporters have are zero, like zero relevance to what's going on in the world right now. Like if we're at the stadium and we do Zoom press conferences with Brian Kelly and two players after the game, I say that's great. Because that means a game got played.
Yeah, right, but the question also includes, what if you weren't allowed in the stadium entirely?
That's a problem.
That's a problem. Because then there's a lot of pseudo reporting going on like that right now. We're comfortable with it, but
Priester with a self edit. That was good right there.
I mean, as sports come back online, it's not like the media is. It seems like there will be press credentials issued for whether it's Major League Baseball or European soccer. It will be limited, but it's not limited to zero. So I don't know why college football would then be like, yes, no media at all. Because like you're telling me you're going to have credentials for NBC or ESPN
right.
to broadcast the game, but people to cover it. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
But there will be limitations. I mean, we've seen we tend to
we've been for that pre-COVID-19.
Yes, we tend to have fun with how liberal the media passes are passed out on certain occasions, and that part will definitely change, provided that the media is allowed to attend. Which, as you mentioned, Pete, if you're going to allow television, you know, but again, access to play, maybe it'll probably be Zoom interviews post game. Mm-hmm.
I am flying to Los Angeles Thanksgiving Friday and staying at that hotel, whether they have a season or not, and whether the governor lets me into the state or not. I am going to Manhattan Beach that day.
You might be pouring your own beer at that bar.
I will be. That's right. There's a liquor store somewhere. I can grab a beer. We can do a Zoom chug.
You can go to MB Post and then actually make your own meal.
Sprinkle the bacon dust
on yourself.
Sit 20 feet away from somebody. I'll be good.
Yeah.
All right, guys. It's been fun. It's been a while, and I've enjoyed it. I know you did, too. We hope our listeners did as well. We don't know exactly when the next Irish Illustrated Insider will be, but it will be just around the corner. We'll let you know that in advance. Thanks for joining us. For Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson, Tim Priester, Irish Illustrated Insider.